We're back on.
All right, where were we? Advanced trial skills. We also talked about UPC starting to do some distance learning where we would, obviously we have video before different things and have put them out there for people to log on and view. We're gonna do some more of that. Janice was talking about some of the training that's gonna happen at the AG's office, and we thought that we'd start with that because that was gonna be short-term stuff, like, you know, a couple hour things, then we'd put those on. And so we're gonna try that and see how that works as well. We've also talked about putting small training modules together and taking them around the state for those that can't come to the conferences. So those are some of the other items that we talked about, and that's the training committee report. Any questions or concerns?
If I could email listing the dates that you will need post-media support.
Uh-huh.
It would be nice to have that in advance versus a month out.
For the whole year.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and we'll go to Chris with the UPAA report.
Well, our conference is June 22nd through 24th, having it at the Park City Marriott. Our agenda's all roughed out, and we're working on finalizing things. We have a meeting at the end of this month to kind of make sure everything's finalized. So,
okay.
Ready to go.
Thank you. Donna?
Oh, okay. I guess I would be interested in hearing from the council about what you want in my reports every time. I don't really know what you want to hear about. So what I've done so far, maybe this is good for Tyson here also because he's going to be doing these for you soon. So what I've been doing so far is just putting the numbers of training and what areas I'm doing them in so that you'll know, you know, where I am around the state. And then I highlight a couple of new things that I've been doing, but I haven't been... I mean, it's not a real detailed report. I don't know what the council wants to hear. I'm doing a new thing with POST where I go out and do their DV101 training for 4 hours with their new recruits. That used to be done by Chris Knowlton several years ago, but I've sort of taken that over. And I can do it for free because my grant pays me. My grant requires me to do training for multidisciplinary training, not just prosecutors. So when you see the numbers on here, I'm doing a thing for POST or I'm doing something for the Park City Police Department, that's part of my grant. I mean, my priority is prosecutors, so anytime Bob asks me to do something, that's my priority, but my grant requires me to train at least 75 criminal justice professionals every quarter. So just so you know, that's why you see that stuff on there, is that why I'm training other people other than prosecutors. So I just normally put this on here so you'll see where I'm going and who I'm training. And then I just highlight a few things that are sort of new. I've been working with for example, in my report I said I've been working with the DA's office on the untested sexual assault kits. They've been a leader in the state on, getting those kits through the system. I'm doing a jury trial with the Salt Lake DA in next month, Dave Waymond. You may remember that name, Jeff.
Yeah.
Dave Waymond and I are doing a jury trial on a very difficult DV case where the victim has stated she's not going to testify. So Dave requested my help, and I'm actually really excited about that. If you guys know of some prosecutor in your office that has a difficult sexual assault case or a, you know, DV homicide or something, I can be the second chair. Bob doesn't want me being the first chair, and I agree with that because then I'll have to go out to all the appearances. But I can be a second chair, and, you know, your prosecutor can give me assignments, like Dave's having me handle all the expert witnesses in the case, and there's three of them. And then I'm doing some motions and things. So that's the kind of stuff I can do, and so I put that in here just so you'll know that that's a possibility for your offices as well. I helped the AG's office do a webinar for the Mexican prosecutors. That was fun, in November. I don't know if all of you knew this, but about a year ago they changed their constitution in Mexico. It used to be, believe this or not, It used to be you were presumed guilty if the police arrested you. And they changed their constitution about a year ago to now you're presumed innocent. And you can request a trial based on the prosecution has to prove your guilt. But there's prosecutors down in Mexico that have been prosecutors for 25 years and have never done a trial. Because, no, I mean,
you're guilty.
You're presumed guilty. Right? So they used to call it paper trials. We only do paper trials. So we just submit all the police reports and then the defendant has to prove that they're innocent. But they changed about a year ago, actually about a year and a half ago, April of a year and a half ago. And so now they're needing training and they requested it from the National Attorney General Group and I helped Scott Reed a couple times with that. So those are just some different things that I've done during the last few months. I don't really know if you want to hear a lot more detailed reports from me, but...
We like those highlights, and then what your plans are.
Okay. My plans are I'm going to work with Scott and his agency on getting a special victim certification for officers in the state. Just like the SWAT team training, you know, that those officers that are highly trained on that specific topic. So I want to get a certification for SVU officers, so that ideally we would have one in every department around the state that the other officers could go to and say, I got this problem with my case. So we're working on that. I hope we're gonna get that up and running by the end of the year. We're gonna have a special certification for that.
Okay.
Other than that, it's sort of this business as usual. I'm speaking next week at the press conference on, there's a press conference the health department is doing next week on that they've been studying, working on this for 2 years, the cost of sexual violence to the state of Utah. And they're releasing their report next week up at the Capitol. Just for your information, it's $5 billion a year with a B in Utah, which is kind of a shocking number. But they include everything like, you know, victims lost wages, you know, they lose their job, they whatever. They include things like that as well. But the cost is just pretty astronomical. So those are some things that are coming up.
Okay.
I don't know what else you want to hear about.
That's good. Thank you. Hi, Tyson.
Anyway, I just thought I'd give you my numbers and then a few kind of unusual, interesting new things I'm doing every time you meet. I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
Anybody wants to hear something different?
No. Is that adequate? I don't know.
Okay.
I use that standard, by the way, with my two little boys. The presumed guilty.
Presumed guilty. You know, there are many countries in this world that that's the standard. You're presumed guilty if the police arrest you. Yeah.
You have to be there more than one time.
I mean, I always thought everyone was just like us, but it's actually the opposite. Most, a lot of countries are presumed guilty.
All right, Tyson, we expect there's an in-depth report from you as well.
I start on the 19th. That's my report. And hope to continue the good work that's been happening. I'm excited to work with everybody, and I'll hit the ground running. If there's anything you guys need from me or want me to do differently as we go along, let me know.
We're going to get him indoctrinated.
There we go. Excellent. Hey, did you want to... Was this the part where you want to talk about the grant and get some
yes.
ideas?
Okay. Yeah, but can I jump down to Matt, the appointee to the criminal law section? I should have put him sooner. Matt, the reason that Matt is here is he is UPC's appointee to the criminal law section at the state bar. And so I just found this out that their bylaws say that a vice chair at large will be appointee from UPC to help with the bar's continuing legal education. So I've invited Matt to come. Like I said, I'll put you further up next time so you don't have to sit through the whole meeting. Just so he can come and, you know, report on what the bar is doing in terms of CLE, as well as if the council has any ideas or suggestions, guidance they want to give Matt to take back to the bar to their CLE. So I don't know if any, I mean, it's just brand new. I don't know that Matt wants to, if you want to say anything, Matt, you're welcome to. If anybody has any guidance, suggestions for Matt.
Looking forward to it. Know a lot of you already. It'll be a good experience.
Yeah. So we could probably excuse Matt.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks.
Okay, now we want to talk about the
grant. All right.
Okay, now we need to talk about the case management grant. So at tab G, hopefully you've all had a chance to look at that. This is a handout that I presented down to the county attorneys that were there at the county attorneys conference in November. So let me just go over it real quickly. Is the first page, you can see that we got the award from CCJJ on September 1st. It's a year-long grant. I've been told that we might be able to extend it beyond the year, but I'm looking that we have until September 1st. And then you can see the dates that we've got there. When I applied for the grant, it was with the understanding that UPC would only have to cover 10% of the grant. And so we were going to do that through, Ron working on it, through offices working on getting it installed, things like that. And then when I received the grant, I found out that it had become a reimbursable grant. So meaning that UPC has to spend $500,000, submit the receipts, and get reimbursed from CCJJ. So that is the first big hurdle that has to be overcome. And then there's just some other requirements that you can see there. So the second page, and these are just some issues that I identified that we have to discuss. The biggest one is the RFP. How are we going to do that? Are we going to piggyback? I know Sim's office is already either done with the process.
We put the RFP out, we've got the vendors in. I think they were doing the test runs with some of those. And so the question is if you want to piggyback, because we've always said that nothing would preclude us from doing either interlocal agreements or anything else with any entity that may want to, if there's a economies of scales to be had from an interest rate. For example, most likely what I'm going to end up doing because of our interlocal agreement with Salt Lake City Prosecutor's Office, most likely we will be not only purchasing ours as well, but we'll probably be purchasing to upgrade Salt Lake City into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what Utah County has done with several of the larger cities in Utah County.
Yeah.
So maybe that's one option. I'm not a purchasing guy for the state. I just don't know exactly how it works and how that would work. So that's a big concern that I have. Then negotiating the contract. I don't know what Carpel, let's see, I don't think we have any Carpel users here. Justware, for example, they don't bill you until your office comes online. And so the reason that's a concern is I mean, I've got to spend the $500,000 all at once. So we would have to negotiate into the contract that you're just going to send me a bill for $500,000 and then so I can, whoever's going to, however we're going to find the money. I mean, that's another big issue. Do we borrow it
so
from
what
one of
the... So what does it mean you have to spend? How to define spend? Is it because if you enter into, let's say, a partnership with Salt Lake County through an interlocal, you could give us the money as part of the participation into that. Would that be an expenditure?
I think so. I just have to...
Because you have to encumber that money.
Correct.
And then give it for value in return or through an interlocal. I don't know. I mean, something like that might be able to meet that, I guess.
I think so. What the grant managers told me from CCJJ is I just have to show that...
It's been encumbered, right?
Yeah, that's probably... they said spent, but I think that's probably correct term as well.
So if the UPC enters an interlocal with Salt Lake DA's office, how wide can you guys reach? I mean, you've said you can reach wherever you got internet, right?
No, I mean,
who are you referring to?
No, I think we're talking about probably two different things, though. So the question, I think what he's talking about is a data management system because what's happened is because as PIM is sort of dying, different counties or different municipalities or PIMS users are sort of going out and purchasing their systems. So now the question becomes, of all that are on PIMS who want to sort of upgrade into a data management system, you can either go write your own RFPs or we've got one written or partner up or however you want to do it to sort of build an economy of scale at the point of purchase. So whatever the vendor is, you go to them, you say, what is your price for 50 users versus what's your price for 180 users? That's going to be fundamentally different in terms of the price point you're going to get. So the question is, do you write separate RFPs or do you bundle them together into a joint one for the purchase, right? I mean, that's what we're
correct,
talking
about. Yeah.
But if Salt Lake DA's office goes out and says, give me your price for the 180 users, and you host the program,
I think that what's going to end up happening is you're bringing those different end users. So however the product is put into and embedded into each office, you're purchasing it. It's just the question is at what price point are you purchasing it? I'm not purchasing it for you. We're coming together. So what I'm saying is, yeah.
Nobody's asking to purchase anything for them. But if you're, would the county host the software?
I think
would each individual entity host the software?
I think that each entity is going to own it, right?
Well, that's kind of up to you. They'll host it if you want a PIM to host it, which is an effective way to do it. In our county, we're hosting it on the county servers for us and for the cities that came in with us. It's partitioned, some magic thing Ron can do, but it's hosted on our servers. We can read each other's data, but we can't write.
Now, I think was your question though, is if Salt Lake hosts it, are you going to be able to get onto access
from
Salt Lake?
Yeah, I think
Just Ware was not willing to do that when I talked to him, because I wanted to help like Jared Eldridge out, and they were not willing to go across county lines at that time.
So it's going to be that's going to be part of the discussion, is to see how that's, right now, the most simplest way to think of it is, we're getting a price point for the purchase for all of us. You buy it, I buy it, we buy it, and at what point do we buy it? Then the next point is that within the item that we are buying, is there a better economy of scale in terms of whether we host it as 180 people with the vendor, or do we do it with ourselves? And does that mean if we do it with ourselves, Salt Lake County or somebody else, that can we all tag into it and make our machines run off that?
But it's not going to help the smaller jurisdictions to get that price point that we get off the bid for 180 jurisdictions if the price point's still out of their reach.
It might
help Salt Lake County because it brings their price point down, but the rest of us are.
Well, but by the same token, if there's no economy of scale with, let's say, 400 buyers, it's not going to help you. If you're by yourself either. So that's just going, and I don't know what that truth of that is going to be.
No, I totally understand.
Can I just ask that? Have you guys seen the same thing that Tooele saw with the increase in the annual user fee versus the purchase point of the software.
And I don't know, Blake Nakamura and Lisa Ashman from our office are the ones who are running the RFP.
Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, I thought last fall we talked about saying, we really, as a state, need to all be on the same one.
Yeah.
Is it worth, I don't know if we've got enough time to do it now with this grant, but is it worth saying, going out to some of these and saying, look, what you're going to give us is a state system. It's going to work in every city and every county. Tell us the price. We know what we got. Now let's go to the legislature with our price, saying, here's what we need. It's statewide. It works for everybody. It lets us talk to each other. It lets us do all this. Here's what we need.
I was going to say, Bob, are you bound by AG's purchasing rules or anything?
Well, that's what I've got to find out.
If you're not, I think we ought to call Carpel and call JustWare and just set up a meeting with a few folks and say, it's too complex to do an RFP, I think, because we don't know how to build it, and they're going to have to help us figure that out. I think we can't tell them on an RFP how to do it. But if we got their input, we could start formulating how we'd write an RFP.
Well, and that's a good point.
That's also, sorry, my bias is, I talked to Sean Mosier, I said, what you're doing does not work for everybody, and it's not going to work. And all the small jurisdictions are not going to come on board because they can't afford you.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets it, and he's looking for direction. He wants them to come on board. He wants direction, other than just saying it's free, So.
Well, and it's not going to be free. I mean, because that's the other issue is how do we divide up this $500,000 grant? I mean, it's clearly not going to buy a system for everyone in the state unless, we somehow work out and Salt Lake County is able to negotiate for the entire state, and then perhaps we might be able to get it down. But that's not going to then cover ongoing payments, as each of the jurisdictions are going to have to pay that yearly user fee.
But I think that's why we do just what Jeff said, is rather than say, let's do an RFP, let's go meet with them, bring in the 3 vendors that can do it and say, here's what we want, tell us how we can do it. And maybe they can say, yeah, we can't do it. But at least we tried.
Mm-hmm.
At least we tried to cover the whole state with something that could talk to everybody. And we know that $500,000 isn't going to do it. But maybe it's a start. And maybe if we can go back to the legislature or to some grant and say, we've got this, we're moving here, here's what we need, then we at least have got a target to put it on. Not just say, give us $1 million, we'll see what we can do for it.
Mm-hmm.
We can say, here's what we need. And I like Jeff's idea of just sitting down with them and saying, here's what we want, tell us what we need.
we should. I mean, we need to figure out with this, we need to figure out city-wise, county-wise, who is looking to move to something like this. We need to know. We know how many potential users we have to talk to Mr. Mosier or whoever he is. And I agree. I think we need to sit down with him and say, look, what's it going to cost us up front with a yearly maintenance fee that we can afford? Find that out. Then we can go and do what we need to do. But we need to know how many potential users we have. And obviously, it depends on price point. I understand that. Cities, my county is the same way. I mean, I've got three prosecutors and three assistants. And you know, price point's a big deal for us, especially with our economy out there, with the oil being the way it is.
I'm going to get it's further in the agenda. UCDA has indicated, you know, James, that they're willing to help. What can they do for UPC? And maybe they're the ones that can reach out. Because I know a year ago, I sent out an email statewide to all the city attorneys and all the county attorneys saying, how many users? You know, those of you that were contemplating moving, you know, I got a response, but the vast majority were, well, it's going to depend on what it costs. You know, since I couldn't tell them what it cost, you know, like, for example, Wayne County, Leila McCartney in Wayne County. I mean, she's one person. She doesn't even have an assistant. So I don't know that she can really afford anything, as opposed to, you know, Salt Lake County that has, you know, greater assets, Utah County. So, I mean, I agree with Stephen, is we need to know how many users there are, but it's really going to depend on what the user fees are going to be.
Well, maybe you need a city guy to talk to the cities.
Yeah.
To find out we need to know the potential. And then we can find out a price point once we know the potential.
The problem is the cities aren't organized in the same way. Like when we talk about OOMPA and things getting involved, OOMPA historically up to this point today has been a conference. That's it.
Right.
And so there's no like OOMPA mailing list. There's no.
Well, there's the UMAA, but that's, I mean, they're just focused on the civil aspect of it. The other thing too is the majority of the cities prosecuting the justice courts, and they're not worried about a case management system.
Well, now that so I just got a call from the Orem Justice Court. Well, it was early in December. Is the justice courts are looking at now mandating e-filing?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, if there's a bill to do it.
It's not a bill, it's the AOC.
I'm sorry, it's AOC.
The city prosecutors I've been in contact with are very worried about a case management system because they're worried about PIMS going away. Although PIMS does have its limitations and it's not perfect, it has been a benefit.
Yeah.
And the cities, a lot of cities use it. Even the cities that use programs like SIRES and different things, they're still using PIMS for document creation and things. And so I know there's a lot of cities, at least in the valley here in Salt Lake County, that very much are interested. We've talked, I've talked to Blake from West Jordan about getting on board with the DA. We're in West Jordan, they wanted to be involved. But again, it's just a cost thing. If they come and tell us it's going to cost us $40,000 to set it up and $20,000 a year, our city council is going to say, draft your own documents.
I can get the information from UMAA what the potential would be, but I agree, we've got to sit down with these guys and at least get something in the ballpark saying this is what the potentiality is, and then what can you bring to us.
You may want to, since this is going to be under a state procurement system, one of the things purchases issues you may want to be cognizant of is you may not be able to have direct contact with a vendor who is also.
But I can, because I'm not part of it.
I know. But I mean, I'm just saying. We're discussing this right now, just as a cautionary issue, is that if somebody else, because we know there's multiple vendors who are interested in it, if we have directed conversation with one as a public monies, we're going to be subject to a challenge by others who did not get it. So just be cognizant of that, because our conversation with the one that you may want may actually preclude them from bidding on it. So just FYI.
Right. And that's why I cut off my conversation with JustWare early last year reason. So what are we going to do? I mean, what happens if it comes down that we have 500,000 and we funnel it towards Salt Lake County, but then the small jurisdictions ultimately get no benefit from that? Is that how the council wants me to spend the money?
So I'll volunteer Scott and I.
He's just, we're just dividing.
Me and him and Jared, and we'll maybe bring in Steve. You want to get in, Steve? Yes, Steve? Okay. We'll just set up a meeting with Carpel and JustWare. I don't know who else.
Well, and we've got the benefit that a couple of years ago, before I took over for Mark, there was a really in-depth study that was done, and they took bids. And so, you know, we've kind of gone, it wasn't really an RFP process in terms of purchasing, it was more of an investigative that was done. So we can, I can funnel that to you.
Go ahead.
I apologize, I have to go do a homicide screening, but just for the record then, if there is a direct contact, because I have to be careful since we're already in an RFP process, I'm going to abstain from any kind of voting or any interaction with any vendor on that, so just that way.
Since I've already got one, I think I'm okay.
I don't have one, so you're okay.
Is that all right if we do that?
Yeah, I think we need to do that and get moving, because I just feel bad, because this is one that the AG's office could have taken a great lead on and solved this, you know, prevented a lot of headaches for the rest of us. But anyway, they didn't have the interest in it. So we need to do that relatively quick to see if we can still get some funding as well once we figure out what the price is, and the funding might come next year. But yeah, we need to let them know that we want it to be on a license basis.
Yeah, nobody's looking for a free ride.
Oh, no, I understand that.
On user fees or figure something else.
So, put that together and let me know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, appreciate that.
And as far as obviously we just got to come up with an equitable formula as far as the $500,000. I mean,
exactly,
we just have to hammer that one out.
The best thing to do would be to purchase at least for most of the smaller jurisdictions and cities. If PIMS is working for them right now, then really what they need is not the full-blown system Sim's going to put in here for Salt Lake County. They need the basic system with all the basics included. And if we could purchase that system, then they can bring it in and do their own tailoring themselves.
Uh-huh.
And just pay the licensing fee every year. That would be, obviously, for the cities and small counties, that would be the best-case scenario, in my opinion.
Well, I'm hoping I can talk them into going across county lines, because Davis County won't do the same thing for me that you're doing for the cities. So I've got to go to Weaver County.
Well, you know,
I didn't realize you couldn't go across county lines.
We talked to them, and they were going to incorporate a bunch of small counties.
It was just we're trying not to get
district
screwed out of some money.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Okay. To pick people off.
So then, number 11, this is new. This was the biggest new piece that I added since last week, is most of you know Chris Hammond. She is a former DA, New York or Brooklyn district attorney, who when did a fellowship in DC to set up the best practices committee. She has since left the fellowship, and she's now the director of the Prosecutor Center for Excellence. She and her staff, you know, comb the country following trends that are affecting prosecutors' office, best practices, things of that nature. Well, she called me on Monday and said that on December 15th, and this is, Scott, for you with Post, that we want to discuss. But anyway, December 14th, the Deseret News reported that the Rocky Mountain Innocence Project had gone in and trained the Unified Police Department for 2 days on eyewitness identification. I forwarded this information to Sim and Blake, and Blake said that they didn't know anything about it. And what you can see from the article, if you read that, is they went in and talked about simultaneous versus sequential witness identification. They're advocating sequential identification, whereas the current science is that simultaneous is the best way to go. And so Chris pointed out that, you know, she's concerned that the Unified Police Department got some erroneous training from Rocky Mountain.
The Unified Police Department want to be trained by the Innocence Project.
If you read the article, it's because, you know, the police, I mean, we all are for, you know, good, solid eyewitness identification, not convicting innocent people. And I don't know, I haven't talked with Unified.
Why wouldn't the Unified Police Department talk to us? Prosecutors or something?
Right.
She was said by FOP.
Yeah, I don't know.
I understand they want to know about the subject matter, but why would they let the Rocky Mountain Innocence people train them?
Yeah, so
they've offered them.
Obviously, that's the concern. And so I don't expect you to, I mean, I gave you a grundle of information on the tabs. Is I don't expect everybody to read every word of it. I just wanted you all to have the information so that you can go back to your jurisdictions, to your local law enforcement, and just say, hey, look, just be aware. You know, we've got resources. If this becomes an issue, we can, you know, come out and train. Chris Hammond sent me, you know, she's the one that sent me all of this. One of them is the New York Police Department's policy on eyewitness identification.